And today, wanted to share about the suffering of healing. I think when we think about healing, we think that it's going to be just wonderful. And this is true in many different contexts. And we forget sometimes that the path of healing is pretty bumpy. And I see some smiles because I think we all realize that. And I'm going to offer some examples of very practical steps of healing that are very painful. And then the path of practice that we're together on in this path of liberation, how that itself is also bumpy and can be painful, depending on how we understand it and what we're holding on to still. So in the most physical sense, I invite us to think about any, let's think of the one that's often used is a splinter in the finger that's become infected. And to get that splinter out, sometimes the whoever is taking care of that, they have to actually cut, sometimes make a little hole, a little incision and take it out. And it hurts, right? It's so that trying to get rid of the splinter that's infected and painful and inflammation, it actually hurts to make that in that cut into the red heated area. And the only reason we let that happen is because we've been promised that when that happens, it'll release the pain and it'll heal. It will become better. It might not be better right there then as we're cutting to get it out, but we've been promised that it will be better. And we have faith, right? Especially with the first time we have encountered that, maybe as a child when we had a splinter and our someone we love told us, it'll be okay, just let me get the needle and dig it out, right? it's kind of a incision being made by that tiny needle to get that out. And we trusted that process. We trusted that person who said, trust me, it's going to be okay. Just let me dig in it. Sometimes we have to make the hole bigger, right? We make the hole bigger so we can pluck out the splinter with the tweezers. I did this just the other day, so it's real. It's real recent. And it came to my mind. I'm like, wow, I'm like making a big hole and it wasn't coming out. I'm like, oh my God, it's really big. Is it worth it? Right. And I was asking myself, is it worth it? It's a really big hole. I couldn't get at this little tiny splinter. But I had faith from a previous experience. Of course, I think we've all had splinters and we've all gone through this. And so I kept doing it. But the very first time that happened, we had to have only faith. And then we had some experience. And based on that experience, the next time it happened, we went forward with it because we had the experience. Right? So this is not unlike our path. This is not unlike this path. We start, we listen to these teachings, we read about them, about this, and we have some faith because we haven't actually put it into practice yet. And then something happens as we start this practice and we're like, oh, wow, something is opening up. And now we have our first experience. And that gives us a little bit more belief and trust. And now we're working off the faith and the experience. So that's the beauty of this path, right? That we keep having to remember is initially, it might be one where we have faith. And as we practice, it moves slowly from faith to experience. And it keeps opening up. And the more experience we have as we practice, the more it moves from faith and the more it's an experiential process. So this is what's so wonderful about these teachings, is that it's always take it on, try it on for yourself, and see if it's true for you. And for some reason, right, it's true. And then we are like, oh, okay, I have more faith. But it's not just faith. It's a faith based on our own experience. So that's a splinter. And then another physical one is my mom just had knee replacement surgery. She's 80 years old, and I was home with her for a little over 2 weeks taking care of her recovery. She had a really hard time. She fell a couple of times afterwards. She had a lot of pain. And I kept saying, so here we have terrible knee pain from arthritis. Osteoarthritis, right? Like bone, you know, the whole bone, very terrible. Putting off the surgery because, you know, why? Because we don't want pain to relieve the pain. But then there's enough people telling us that it's really going to be okay. And so we go, what do? It's kind of like the splinter, but just on a larger scale. What do? We get cut, big old cut the bone. Cut the bone, y'all, cut the bone. And then put in these parts from plastic and, you know, robotics, titanium, and replace those areas of the bone. And those are all very painful, drilling holes into the bone and reconnecting. So a painful process again to get to a non-painful outcome. So I just experienced that. I only came back this midweek from New Orleans, and just watching the suffering of the post-surgery and the fall, and then what happens with the mind as it becomes challenged and fearful that will this pain end? Yeah. And the belief that this painful process is going to come to a non-painful outcome, right? And honestly, every surgery is like that, right? Cut. Sorry, but anytime they cut into you, it's going to hurt. Sorry. I don't care how much anesthesia is used, what process, acupuncture, pills. There's just nerve fibers that, you know, are all upset. Again, a painful process that requires a faith to get us to this non-painful end. And so now we're about 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks out, and there's less pain. And every day, what's the message is, wasn't today a little less painful than yesterday? And like that, right? Like that. So those are two physical processes of we go through pain to release pain. Like this path of healing is one that requires a real faith that there's a process that's coming to healing. And then I want to get now into the process of waking up to our understanding that shifts, say, some belief systems that we have. So I'll use spaces like organizing spaces, housing justice spaces, where we're doing organizing work, where time and time again, as we're talking about in the case of housing injustice and the kind of work that I'm involved in social justice work, as we talk about the history of uneven development in America and the United States, of the continuous displacement of Black families, Black and Brown families, to redevelop areas for gentrification, right? How, as we talk about that with residents who have been displaced, how that realization is really painful. In fact, it's traumatic. So it's traumatic to recognize and acknowledge this history, because what it, instead of just being moved over and over again and suffering the pain of that, when we start deciding that we're going to organize so that we can stop it, it's also a process of acknowledging that racism is real, colonization is real, and it has had this effect. It doesn't like me. It discriminates against me because of who I am. And that is a painful, very, very painful process, because that's acknowledging the reality of a society, in this case, the United States, that's built on a whole history of oppression of Black bodies and brown bodies, right? That is painful. And so I'm experiencing this all the time in spaces of doing this work. And I'm listening to the stories, and what I hear is, this is painful. It's a different kind of pain than the not knowing, but I realize it needs to happen. And I'm so happy that we're in a space where we can actually talk about it, and we're in community where other people are acknowledging the truth of this history. Right? So another process, right, which is this, not just a mental awareness and waking up to a history, but noticing the difference in the kind of pain that comes from having something being done over and over again, and the suffering from that, to an acknowledging of why it's being done and how we want to move into shifting that, taking power. But just because we say we're going to move to this place of becoming more powerful by knowing, it doesn't mean that it's not painful either, because it hurts to acknowledge this history. Like, this history hurts us. To acknowledge that people don't love you because of your Blackness or your brownness, and that you live in a society that just consistently does that, and that didn't, a society's educational system that didn't teach us outright about, this is a system we live in. We're targeted. And we're going to keep doing this to you because we have policies in place that are going to make sure we keep doing this to you. And so to face that is also painful, but facing it gives us the power to start to organize, to undo it. And it's not just in this particular setting of housing injustice. This is in many different areas of injustice. As we learn and we organize, we acknowledge and we strategize. And in order to do the strategizing, we have to know what we're strategizing about. What are the wrongs that we're going to right, right? And that knowing is painful, right? So getting to freedom in that way, right? Freedom from displacement, freedom from developers telling you, I'm going to take your land because you don't have any power. That's a process also of awakening to that and the pain of that. And yet, in the midst of it, we can also see how it's a different pain. So this is the continued awakening, right? The continued knowing. And then there's the pain of stepping into practice. So all of us have been practicing for a while, right? And I think all of us recognize that when we started to practice, we had to start changing some of our behaviors, because we had different ideas of things now, right? And we might have lost some friends, right? Not because we think they're terrible people, it was simply because we started waking up to a reality beyond the one that we've been honestly caged in, sleepwalking within that reality, not the full truth of our noble selves on a path, being born human, being given this opportunity to step into this noble path of awakening and to wake up to this realization that there is this path and how wonderful that is and how contradictory it is to the one that we're born in that is the default message that we have lived into until we started and stepped onto a path, right? And they're simple things and they're big things, right? Going home after a retreat, trying to eat mindfully when everyone around us is trying to talk with us and giving us a hard time because now all of a sudden, you know, what happened to you? You got, you know, you think you're better. Like, what's this mindfulness stuff? Why are you walking so slowly? Why are you not eating and talking at the same time? And that's just a few things. And don't, you know, if you've been drinking alcohol, don't even try to stop drinking alcohol. I experienced that. I stopped drinking alcohol after taking the 5 mindfulness trainings. I lost a lot of friends. I tried hanging out, but it was different, right? Because there's something that comes with the alcohol, right? And when you're not all vibing like that, and I'm not judging the alcohol, I'm just saying that it brings a different state of mind. And if you're not all, you know, we hang around people that are doing things that are similar to us. And when you're not doing the same thing, it's a different vibe. And you can try to be there. And then at some point you're like, not working. Let me shift here. And so it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's painful because people you love, you lose them, right? And the loved ones we have, we want to be with them sometimes. And there's a process. We have to invite them along. What is going to be their spiritual journey, right? If you used to curse a lot, and you want to stop cursing. I was one of mine too. People were like, what do you think? What are you trying to do? Like, what do you think? You're better? I mean, all this stuff, right? That shifts because we want to practice nonviolent speech or use kind words. And it varies for everyone. And so it's a hard thing, right? It's not, the path is bumpy. And it can be very painful. So those are kind of the more social things. Now the internal things that are painful is where we're heading, which is when we start slowing down and really discovering who we really are. When we start noticing in the silence what the mind is actually thinking. Oh my gosh, I actually think like that. And that's painful. And those are the things that we want to push away, right? Because we have a lot of fears around who we are, being liked, what's going to make me a likable person. So we have a whole set of things. And when we start slowing down and pausing and noticing, who is this body? What does this mind think beyond the words that come out the mouth? Because it's one thing to use kind speech. But if we're using kind speech, but in the mind, we're still thinking some stuff. And when we start to slow down, we start to notice what else is there. And we pause. And in that micro minute of stillness, microsecond of stillness, we start to see, oh, wow, I thought that. And that is painful, like really seeing everything that we are. And sometimes we don't like what we see. And that's painful. And yet, it is our path of liberation, is to know who this person is so that we can decide what is it that we're going to do different and what are we going to do the same. What are we going to put effort into maintaining? What will we put effort into bringing up? What will we put effort into removing? And so this path of knowing the self, of awakening to what are the things that I'm greedy around? What are the things that I have aversion to? What are the things that I'm confused or have delusion around? Because it's all here in us, you know. We've spent most of our lives looking outward, easily saying, oh, that person's this, that person's that. And yet this path of liberation is really one of starting to come home and looking to see what is here. What is it that I want to transform? And so it's bumpy. And we're on this path. In our tradition, we really prioritize and invite in a lot of joy, a lot of lightness. And this is a wisdom that in our tradition from Thai and our ancestors, our lineage, that I think we're so lucky to have. Because if we're really doing this work of liberation, we will need to find a joy to take good care of the bumps in the road. And the wisdom of Thich Nhat Hanh, there are many, but this particular wisdom was knowing that as we do this work, we need the anchors of joy. We need at any moment to re-remember the joy, the things that bring us happiness, the lightness, the things that make us smile, so that we can take good care of the bumps on this path of liberation. They're not separate. They're right. They need to be right there, this mud and this lotus, right? I mean, we all know, we say mud, lotus, mud. I mean, you know, if we can't say anything, we know about the mud and the lotus in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. And yet, we may get tired of saying it, and yet it is the deepest teaching. Because what I just described was a path of bumpiness. And yet, in order to stay on this path of bumpiness, we need to remember the lotus. We need to remember all the lotuses in that pond, not just the mud. And so in the process of basically saying, you know, take this path to liberation, if you really think about it, and being very honestly, if you really think about it, it's like saying, I'm going to get liberated and I'm going to go through all the pain and suffering that I need to get liberated. And I keep hearing no mud, no lotus, no mud, no lotus, no mud, no lotus, you know? And I was like, Thay, man, you are so right. No mud, no lotus. Not only is the mud there already, but we're going to keep uncovering the mud. And out of those mud that we uncover, we're going to grow lotuses. Because every time we step on something that's, as you might say, is a minefield, it opens something up that we can transform. And just like that, every time something difficult comes up, it is something to practice with. It is something to find and remember and re-remember that it is this pain that can be transformed. And if we understand that it is a pain that can be transformed, it immediately opens up a window of how we're going to take care of it, how we're going to look at it. How are we going to bring the different skillful means and practices to it to help us make it light, make it something that we can see beyond and not be stuck in it. On the ultimate dimension of this is the understanding of also what we talk and teach about a lot in our tradition, which is the dualistic way of thinking, right? The negative, the positive, the coming, the going, the birth, the death. And that when we start seeing beyond that and start seeing the non-dualism, and then when we do have the bumps, we don't get so rigidly attached to the pain of it or the difficulty of it. Because now we don't go to these extremes, we can more easily blend them together. And so we go from this conditioned world of good, bad, right, wrong, birth, death. We shift a little bit into the ultimate. And we're thinking, oh, this is a continuation. This will change. And we don't get stuck in the pain. We don't get stuck in the negativity. We don't get stuck in the mud. Because right there, we can see already that right there, the lotus is with it. And so right there in the middle of the pain, if I breathe and I pause, I can see that it's not a continuum of pain. It's actually moments of pain. And I might actually start to find the space between each moment. And maybe as time continues, I can elaborate those spaces between each mind moment of pain. And so there's this dance, this beautiful shift of going in and out in the between the ultimate and the conditioned reality. Just like that. Just like that, in that moment. So we don't wait for enlightenment or nirvana or all the bright lights to wait, you know, and all the things to go off and say, oh, now I'm in the ultimate. No, no. It's right here, right now, in that moment of pain. Can I get still enough and pause enough to see that right there in that space between those moments, those microseconds, there's no pain. And so we see this continuum instead of these two things that pull us, almost make us fight ourselves, make us have to make a choice, when really it's all there anyway. So I'm going to stop there. And I want to read just at this closing part here from Enjoying the Ultimate. This is Thich Nhat Hanh's, it's a commentary on the Nirvana chapter of the Chinese Dharmapada. So I think many of us are familiar with the Dharmapada. Often the ones we see are the Pali. This is a chapter from the Chinese, and it is the Chinese edition, verse 18, page 109. So verse 18 reads, when suffering ends and the formations are quietened, happiness will be there silently, and there will be peace. O bhikkhus, I have realized this, and so I do not seek to enter any particular realm anymore. And so each verse has a commentary on it. It's really quite nice because you get to be with the verses instead of sometimes, you know, you just read the verses. And so there's some commentary, and the commentary to this, part of the commentary to this is, we do not understand what is the nature of formations. They are impermanent, but we think that they are permanent. They have no separate self, but we think they have a separate self. It is this wrong perception that leads to suffering, and not the formations that make us suffer. Our body makes us suffer because we have a wrong perception about our body. The object of our infatuation, which we are chasing after, does not make us suffer. It is because we have a wrong perception of it that we become attached to it. We have a wrong perception about the object of our infatuation, and so we have a desiring mind. It is the desiring or infatuated mind that makes us suffer, not the object of our desire. Fame and profit do not make us suffer, but the way we perceive fame and profit does. The metaphor of the man throwing a stone at the dog is a good one. The stone is not a fault. The stone is not at fault for hurting the dog, but the responsibility for the dog's suffering lies with the man who throws the stone. Out of ignorance, the dog thinks that the stone is its enemy. When we suffer, we think that this world, our body, our five skandhas are to blame. In truth, it is only because we have a wrong perception about the world and our five skandhas that we suffer. So I will close with that and invite us to take a breath in and out and let it all go with a bell.